Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Crash Test Support Division here at Car Talk Plaza. Now, the folks at NHTSA, everyone knows NHTSA.
You mean the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration?
Yes, those are the guys that crash the cars in order to determine which ones are safe and which ones have to be sold with the funeral wreath mounted right on the grill. Anyway, they're rethinking the crash test dummy phenomenon, or whatever you want to call it.
I read that. There was an article in
every paper.
In Automotive News.
Yes.
Everywhere in the world there was an article, yeah.
And anyway, NHTSA has been using one kind of crash test dummy for years, and it apparently just dawned on them that using only one body type is ridiculous because drivers come in an infinite variety of body types, right?
You ain't kidding.
So now they're building.
I've been married to most of them, personally.
Not all of them. Dig yourself right in, man.
Half of them.
Half. Which half would that be?
I don't think I want to go there.
Well, anyway, they are now building, or maybe breeding is the right word, a whole family of dummies for crash testing.
Yeah.
Now, right now, they're using like a 5 foot, 10 inch, 170 pound male dummy, modeled after my brother. And some other members of NHTSA's new dummy family will be, for example, a 5 foot, 3 inch, 107 pound female and a child dummy. I know a few kids that could.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is important. I mean, the child dummy, you know, the trouble is that they don't do it right. Here's the problem, because NHTSA is a bunch of engineers. And so when they do these tests, like they have the driver sitting there behind the steering wheel with like both hands on the steering wheel.
Right.
And then they crash the car.
No, you need to
be. What about the guy leaning over? He's getting coffee out of the cup holder. He's changing the radio station.
Oh, he's trying to fish out a cigarette that fell down between his legs.
Right? I mean, that's when the accidents happen.
Right, with his butt lifted off the seat and his head leaning forward.
His head is leaning
exactly.
forward.
The accidents happen.
You don't have an accident when you're sitting there behind the wheel with both hands on the steering wheel.
Not usually.
No.
No, when you're groping for that cassette tape that fell under the seat.
Exactly. When you're leaning behind you to get stuff out of the back seat.
Or to give the kids a dope slap.
Exactly right. So we're going to try to straighten them out. I mean, like the thing with the kids. They got a 60-pound baby or something they're going to put in the back seat. But what they really should have is a couple of kids trying to strangle each other. And one of them trying to push the other one out the window. That's what realism is. Come on, guys. Get it straight.
And there's got to be a mother-in-law. 4'11", 350. Sitting in the back seat, but leaning forward.
Yeah.
Leaning forward.
Between the seats.
Between
yeah.
the seats, trying to tell the
son-in-law.
The son-in-law where to go.
Or how to use the global positioning system. Pressing all the buttons. What's this one for? What's this one for, David?
Anyway, if you want to talk to a couple of real dummies, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Dr. Ralph Armstrong in Monroe, Louisiana.
Hi, Dr. Ralph. How are you?
Very, very well. Thank you. I've got a 93 Suburban.
Wait a minute. What kind of a doctor are you?
I'm a gynecologist.
Ah.
Okay.
But I've got a 93 Suburban that about 2 weeks ago, I turned off the ignition and a clicking sound started under the dashboard. And it lasted about 20 seconds, and I turned the ignition back on, and it came back on again. I have a recording of it here that I can play for you. And it comes on every time that I turn on the ignition, and it lasts 20 seconds because I've timed it. And then when I stop and turn the ignition off, it comes on for 20 seconds.
You could set your watch by it.
Yes, yes. Now, here's the sound. I've got a recording here. But that's the sound that it
got
makes.
It.
I got it, too. Remember that? There was a quiz show that used to be on when we were kids called Beat the Clock.
No.
But you know, it's so regular. It sounded at first like maybe there was something alive under the hood, and I looked, but there was nothing there.
Yeah, woodpecker. I mean, it's definitely woodpecker sound. A little slower than a real woodpecker, but very close.
Do you listen to the radio?
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have a power antenna?
No, it's just a regular antenna with...
Oh, what a bummer!
Well, you know, I've turned the air conditioner on and off. It's not affected by that. It doesn't affect the functioning of the car. I still drive.
Yeah, no,
well.
I think it has something to do with the heating and ventilation system.
I like it.
Under the dash, there are vacuum motors. Actually, they're not really motors like you would think of a motor in the traditional sense, but it is a motor in that it moves a door.
Right. When you apply some force to it, it moves the door.
Like vacuum.
Happens to be vacuum.
Oh, I see.
And what's happening is you're hearing that flap, 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 flap.
Play it again. Let's see if we really believe this story.
All right, let me see if I can turn it on again. I'm getting to kind of like it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, why would you want to get rid of it?
No, I mean, you've obviously said that it has no effect on the performance of the car, you know, so why bother? But I think it's one of those doors that's either, when you shut the car off, you interrupt the source of vacuum.
Uh-huh.
So the door, which is being held open by the vacuum, keeps going pip, 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 pip.
It'll open, close, and it'll pop, 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 pop.
Until finally the vacuum source is gone completely. It goes down to zero, and the noise goes away.
Okay, but you don't think it's dangerous, my leaving it unfixed for a little while?
Our lawyers have told us not to ever say that.
Right. Everything has the potential to be dangerous,
everything
Dr. Ralph.
Everything has the potential
to be
dangerous.
I'm familiar with that.
You think that you got malpractice insurance.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing.
It's killing us.
That's a concept I'm fully aware of.
Yeah, but it sure doesn't sound to me like it's dangerous.
Okay.
So you need to stick your head up under that dashboard, and you'll find it immediately.
Okay, I was a little afraid to do that because, you know, I don't want to do anything to hurt my hands. That's the main thing.
That is important.
There's nothing up there that can hurt you.
Okay, good.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
It's a rattlesnake.
It could be a rattler. Louisiana water moccasin could be under that dashboard.
Sounds like a rattlesnake, doesn't it? A little bit.
Is he still there? He's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah.
Oh,
don't do anything. take it to the deal. See you later.
Okay.
Thanks, Dr.
Thanks.
Ralph.
Appreciate you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk. But the power antenna would have been so good.
Oh, the power antenna is the answer. I mean, he may think he doesn't have a power antenna, but he does. General Motors, in their great wisdom, sneaked in half of a power antenna.
Oh, yeah?
So the motor is down there.
But the antenna isn't.
But the antenna isn't.
In case he ever wanted it, all they had to do is
they would have to just dump it, because it's cheaper for them to put it in.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Marcia, and I'm calling from San Francisco.
Marcia.
So it must be, this is clever. It must be Marsha.
That's correct. Anybody who was born in the 50s spells their name with an S-H-A because there was some actress whose...
is that right?
Whose fathers, our fathers were in love with this actress, and so he got named Marcia with an S-H-A.
Is it like Marcia Mason or somebody like that?
Yeah, I think somebody like...
Marcia Brady, I think, yeah.
I think that was much later.
Marcia. Do you have a standard shift car?
I do, and it has 140,000 miles, and it still has the original clutch.
How many miles?
140,000.
How can that be possible? We were in San Francisco together one time, my brother and I, and we said, you've got to be a complete screwball to have a standard transmission in a city like San Francisco. So I guess my brother was... in a way, calling you, Marcia, a screwball.
By association.
Now, isn't that a nice thing to say to a person he doesn't even know?
Well, no, it's not, but, you know, it might take one to...
Yes, it does. But that's not your question,
but
right?
This has something to do with the problem.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm pregnant with twins.
Wow.
And my husband and I have two cars. We have my BMW with 140,000 miles with the original clutch. And we have his Toyota Celica with about that many miles on it. And his Toyota's falling apart.
Yeah.
So we're going to get rid of his Toyota, and we're going to get a mommy car.
Mm. Yeah.
No van. We're
not thinking
about a RAV.
A RAV?
A Toyota RAV.
RAV is a mommy car? Come on, Marcia.
You don't think so?
Have you talked him into this?
Well, I think so.
You're good.
I gotta tell you.
You are good.
Women love this car.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it's cute and looks manageable.
It is. it is managed, and it fits into our garage. You know how in San Francisco all the garages are underneath the houses?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's right. It's the right size. There's no question about it.
Okay, now there's another problem, though.
Yeah?
We're going to get rid of my husband's old Toyota Celica, and he's going to drive my BMW.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, it is, except that, you know, he's Honduran, so everything is a little bit slower there. I lived in Boston for 10 years. I learned to drive there, so I drive my car pretty aggressively. When my husband drives my BMW, he's...
more sane. More sane than you are.
Well, yeah, and not nearly as aggressive. So what he does is he'll start to drive and he'll put it in second gear and at like 1500 RPMs, and I keep telling him he has to rev up the engine a little bit more, and it's better for the engine.
Absolutely.
Well, no matter what happens, when the clutch on the BMW fails, you're going to blame him because number one, he'll be driving it.
Absolutely.
And it'll be his fault, you know. So, but bear in mind, with 140,000, it's probably on its last legs, the clutch.
Yeah, no, you should count on a clutch. I mean, because with 140,000 miles on the car, the clutch is gone. Absolutely. And so let's not even blame him for the clutch.
Okay, I'll give him a little slack.
Cut him some slack on the clutch issue.
Okay, but what do you think about this shifting gears that...
No, you're right.
No, as a matter of fact, BMW did a big study a bunch of years ago in which they suggested that you get into high gear as quickly as possible.
No. That was only for increased mileage.
No, as long as the thing doesn't ping, their recommendation is get up through the gears and get into high gear as soon as you can.
But not in San Francisco. No, man, you want to be, you could exist in San Francisco in first gear only. If you only had one gear, it would be first gear, and you would never have to shift.
Yeah, maybe two gears.
Because it works going up, it works coming down.
Well,
it's perfect.
Go through his stuff and find out how many receipts he has for new clutches on the Celica. If he has more than six or seven, then he's probably bad at it. But
you know what to do? Go to your mechanic and tell him to put the thing in first gear and weld it there. So if he wants to go backwards, he just throws the clutch in and he'll roll backwards.
Well, will you tell him though what the problem is with putting it into second gear at 1500 RPMs instead of driving out to 3500 or so?
Sure, you're lugging the engine all the time.
But if you're only driving at 12 miles an hour, which is what you're doing in San Francisco, and it's always 50 degrees there, at least every time I've been there, it's been 50 degrees, then don't worry about it. You're not going to overheat it. You're not going to hurt anything, and let him drive it the way he wants. Leave the guy alone.
If it doesn't stall and it doesn't shudder
and buck and spit and fight and do everything else,
then he's really not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, you'll be so absorbed with the RAV4 and the kids, you won't care if he smashes this thing up.
You'll fall out of love with that BMW in a heartbeat when you take delivery of the RAV4. BMW will mean nothing to you. You'll say, BMW? What does that mean?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll just let him drive it however he wants.
Just let him drive it, of course.
See you, Marcia.
All right, thanks.
And good luck with those sweet little guys in the back seat.
Two boys.
Yeah?
You lucky guy.
Gail. See ya.
Thanks for your help.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
I wonder if she's going to name them like Ray and Tom. We didn't ask her that. What is she going to name them?
It would be fitting.
It would be.
Yeah, it would be a tribute to us.
It would.
It would be stupid. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Bill from Dover, Delaware.
Hey, Bill.
Bill.
Why do I have the feeling we've spoken before?
Everybody says that.
Really?
They say I have a voice that sounds like everybody
else. Oh, you sound like that guy from the IRS that keeps calling.
Oh, man, he's calling you too?
Anyway, what's up?
Well, about 10 days ago, I'm driving to the airport with my wife. And the airport's about an hour and a half away. We went to Baltimore. Well, 6 o'clock in the morning, we're halfway there. Man, the temperature gauge goes up, skyrockets.
Oh,
jeez!
Isn't it always the way?
Oh, man, I had a flight at 7:10 and it's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we decided to go to the Western Auto. It opened at 8 o'clock, and sure enough, the water hose is broken on the top, you know?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, since then, the temperature gauge has been fluctuating up and down.
And all you did that day was replace a hose?
Yes.
You haven't told us yet what kind of a car it is.
Oh,
but
I
wanted to guess.
Okay.
Really? You're going to guess what kind of a car it is?
Well, I'm going to start big.
You're going to start?
I'm going to start with, you know, I'm going to scale it down. Does it have four wheels?
Yes.
All right. Is it made in America?
No.
Yes.
It is.
I won't buy anything else except American.
Okay, well, I have no idea what it is.
I don't either. I was going to guess it was a Volvo until he said that.
I was going to guess it was a Honda. I was heading for Honda, but...
Yeah. It's a 93 Sable station wagon, Mercury Sable station wagon.
Okay.
What? Which hose was it?
It was the top hose.
To the radiator.
Short one.
Yeah.
No, coming off the water pump.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's a right-angled hose.
Oh, the little skinny hose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does blow all the time.
Okay.
And now the temperature gauge has been erratic.
Right.
When you did this.
Yes.
You saw that the hose was broken. You pulled off the old hose. How much stuff did you lose?
He didn't do it himself. They did it.
Yeah, they did it. Yeah, everything was.
But you
lost.
Were watching them. How much fluid did they lose?
No, he was in the waiting room pacing.
Yeah,
he was
miss
his plane.
They wouldn't let me in.
He doesn't know how much he lost.
Oh, you don't know any of these answers.
No, what they did was they put the hose on there, but knowing you were in a hurry or maybe not doing a complete job, they left some air in the system.
They didn't bleed it.
So I think it's airbound.
That's what it is.
Did it overheat
in the system.
That day that hose blew? Did it overheat?
Yes, it did.
Well, then I would change the thermostat because you probably croaked it.
Ah, okay.
I would replace the thermostat and get all the air out of there, fill it up to the tippity top with antifreeze, and everything will happen like it's supposed to.
Ah, great.
See you, Bill.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tommy, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Did it have to do with three clams in a martini bar?
No, that was the joke that Dad told us.
There was
no puzzler last week, but we do have some very interesting things to discuss when we come back.
And I take it that will be in just a minute?
You'll take it correctly. We'll be right back.
Now I'm back to work and thriving in this big old rig I'm driving, hauling everything from bowling balls to fuel. Once had so much time to kill, now my PDA is filled with 100 million things I got to do. When I'm out there on the highway, I'm a multitasking fool. Between the stock trades, downloads, eBay sales, and my correspondence school. So fill her up with ethanol, tell my broker that I called, pour me one more grande latte for the road.
And even those shipwrecked sailors opt to wait for their rescue without a radio when they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from JB Weld. When you have a big or small repair project at home or in your garage, choose JB Weld, the leader in epoxy adhesives. JB Weld products bond strongly to a variety of surfaces in even the toughest environments. Proudly made in the USA, it's the brand both pros and experienced DIYers have trusted for more than 50 years. Available at jbweld.com, Amazon, Walmart, and your local auto parts or home improvement retailer. Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/cartalk to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
We spend millions of hours and billions of dollars on video games, but can consoles still compete with the next level of streaming and subscriber services? I'm Joshua Johnson. Subscribe to 1A on NPR as we consider the future of gaming.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and I believe my brother has something he wants to talk about.
Well, you
Tommy,
might remember,
the floor is yours.
Remember years ago, we got a call from some poor guy whose elderly father wanted to drive across the country like a 6-week trip, and the caller and his brother got talked into going with him?
I remember it well.
I mean, does that sound like hell or what? Anyway, it gave us this idea. We would like to collect the worst stories of driving vacations, or road trips that went wrong, like the time your radiator blew out in Death Valley or your VW Squareback burst into flames on Route 66, and your college girlfriend dumped you on the spot and your windshield wipers aren't working anymore. The time you picked up those funny smelling hitchhikers and then you ended up in a Mexican jail. But if you have a story about a road trip gone awry, it doesn't have to be a vacation. Any kind of road trip.
Anything where you were in the car and some catastrophe.
Yeah. Go to our website, cartalk.com. You'll see the Highway to Hell section right on the homepage. We'll post the most amusing stories when we get enough of them and read the best one here on the show. That's what I'm asking.
Is that all the winner gets? A lousy reading on the show?
It's not a winner. It's a guy or a woman who has gone through some horrible trauma, and we're simply going to acknowledge on public radio.
And make that person relive it.
Make that person relive and suffer all that pain all over again. And you should get a prize for that.
Okay. Anyway, if you have a question about your car or anything else, you know, or if you can't wait to participate and you want to tell your story right now, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Lee Thompson in Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Lee. How you doing, Lee?
Pretty good, pretty good. I've
Excellent.
Got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
I've got a 1986 Honda Civic, and it's pretty warm down here. My wife was driving it the other day, and it started spewing water vapor.
Through the air conditioner.
Yeah, we took it to the Honda dealer.
What did he say?
He said there was nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah,
he's right.
Well, gee whiz.
I mean, there probably is nothing wrong with it. I mean, what's happening? I mean, what's happening is clouds are forming in your car.
Oh, gee.
I think because...
That explains those little thunderbolts. I'm glad I don't have those MX3 tires.
Yeah, when you start getting lightning, then you have to worry.
Well, but the lightning isn't so bad, it's the hail.
No kidding.
I mean, you got all this cold air, right?
Go ahead, he's going to try to explain
this. No, you're going to love this.
I know I am.
When he first starts out, he's trying to air condition a very hot, humid car.
Well, under what circumstances, Lee, does the steam come out, or the vapor, the clouds?
Well, it must have been a pretty humid day.
Sure.
But had she been driving the car for a long time?
I think she just got into it and...
See, my theories are getting better every minute here, isn't it?
It scares me.
And when all this ice-cold air, almost ice-cold air, hits that humidity, what happens when you got water vapor and you cool it off?
Yeah,
you took PChem 561.
Yeah, but I dropped out after 3 weeks.
It condenses.
That's right.
And it turns into rain.
Oh, okay.
Or at least something like rain, which is a cloud.
All right.
Well, but otherwise, the air conditioner worked satisfactorily, except for the formation of the clouds.
Yeah, as far as I know, it doesn't seem to cool off very fast.
Okay, well, I had a similar experience of the day. My wife and the kids and I were driving in some car. I don't remember what it was.
You were married?
Yes.
I didn't know
well,
that.
It's a secret. I never, don't tell anybody. And I had the air conditioner. It was a hot day. And we were driving on the highway, and the air conditioner was on full blast, and it was about 45 degrees in the car. And
yeah, did you have your hat with the flaps?
I had the hat with the flaps on and the gloves.
And the gloves.
And as we came close to the house, I realized that it might be, I thought that it might be cooler. And I opened a couple of windows. I pressed the buttons and two windows went down. And within about a minute of having that infusion
the
of
clouds
hot,
came.
Moist air, huge clouds started pouring out of the air conditioner vents for that very reason. Only because of that. And had I not opened the windows, that wouldn't have happened.
No.
Because the air conditioner recirculates
right.
to a certain extent and keeps the cold air in the car. But once I let all that hot air in, that moist hot air, that's what happened. Now, this car has a lever for recirculate and outside
right.
air. It should be on recirculate.
Okay.
Probably.
Yeah, of
that
course.
Might be the problem.
So you may have this.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. It does seem to cool it off a little bit faster that way once all the hot air is
gone. Yeah.
It cools it off faster if you have it on recirculate. It does take in, even on recirculate, it does take in a certain percentage of outside air anyway, and it would probably prevent this from happening if you kept it on recirculate.
Okay.
All right?
Hey, guys. You know, you were talking about the static wedgie there the last show about the MX4 Michelin?
Yes,
I do recall.
The electric wedgie, I think it was called.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
That's not really the correct technical terminology.
No?
What is it?
No. See, I've got brochures from the Automotive Society of Sciences. You may be familiar with that.
Yes, I know them.
Dr. Max Posterior.
Yes, I know him, too.
The actual technical term for that is the electrostatically induced crack encroachment.
Electrostatically induced crack encroachment.
Yeah,
I
is deleterious wedgification effect.
Wedgification.
Yeah, those technical briefs have a load of information in them, man.
Thanks for calling, Lee.
Quite welcome.
See you later.
Goodbye.
Now, Lee was a real sleeper. Now, you wouldn't have expected...
He just sneaked out and went in, didn't he?
I wouldn't have expected that from Lee at all. I would have expected a very southernly...
In fact, I wondered if he made up that whole story on the air conditioner just so we could sneak in his little zinger there.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kathy in Logan, Utah.
Hi, Kathy.
Kathy.
Logan?
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Where is Logan?
It is way up in the northern corner up by the Idaho border.
Ooh, that must be an exciting little
corner. Oh, it's where
corner.
Idaho and Wyoming and...
Yeah, and Utah all come together.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, I know you. You're near Bear Lake.
Yes, Bear Lake.
I've been there.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
I think I've been there. Anyway,
all right.
Now that we've had a geography lesson for the week, what's up?
Okay. I have a 94 Dodge Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And my son locked the keys in the trunk, and it was our only copy of the key. And so we went through the back seat to get into the trunk to get the key.
Yeah.
And we can't get the backrest of the back seat back in place properly.
Yeah,
so
that a
whenever
pain?
I brake, you know, hit the brakes really hard, the front seat, you know, the seat goes flying forward with the kids, and I just can't figure out how to get it hooked back in there. Do I need to take it to the dealer, or am I just missing something? There was nothing about it in the owner's manual.
Oh, no.
How did you get it out?
Well, my husband pulled it out, just brute strength. But it looks like there's like a little catchy thing. I mean, it wasn't hard. He didn't break anything to get it out.
Usually you have to lift it up to pull it out. Did he just pull it straight out? He may have. Maybe
he
can't find the little things it hooks on because he broke them off.
Here's the important question. How long after your son locked the keys in the car did your husband remove the seat? Was it within 1 hour?
I don't know. Probably not, because I think we searched everywhere.
After you gave up the search.
After we gave up the search, he pulled the seat off. Oh, pretty, you know, pretty quick.
He broke something.
You think so?
Yeah, if he had gone into the house and sat down, taken a nap.
Thought about it.
Maybe read something. Maybe even read the book on how to remove the seat. Maybe he wouldn't have wrecked it. But if he did it in anger.
No, he wasn't angry.
How do you know that?
Well, he's a very mellow person. He, you know, he doesn't get angry too much.
He may have that internal anger. Yeah.
Okay.
He may have it. Don't ever trust those mellow types.
So he should.
Especially when they're bent over trying to rip something out of the back seat of a little Spirit that's so hard to get into anyway because it's so little.
Yes, it was a very frustrating day.
When your knee is on that.
Oh, other things that happened that day?
Well, no, pretty much just this, because we couldn't find, you know, once you get in the trunk, it's dark. We couldn't find a flashlight.
How old is your son that did this?
9.
Oh, that's excusable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what he could have broken, although he could have broken something. But I think at this point, is he tried unsuccessfully to put this back in, and is he getting angrier about it?
Many
no,
times.
My husband is extremely unmechanically inclined, and he hasn't, once he got it out, he didn't try putting it back in.
He was so proud of himself at that point.
Exactly.
So, he got it out, and he said to you, Kathy, this is your job. You figure out how to go.
I took it out, you put it back in.
That's right. He couldn't just pound it back in, you know, with his strength.
Oh, you should take it right to the Chrysler dealer.
Well, my son did the very same thing. I think he was like 23 at the time. No, he was a young kid, like 10. And he asked for the key to the car so he could put something in the trunk or get something out of the trunk. And he came back 10 minutes later with the sheepish look on his face, and he said, I locked the key in the trunk.
And after 7 or 8 dope slaps.
And my brother actually did the very same thing. He got in the back seat, and he, like an animal, he broke the back seat. I think it was a Buick. And he ripped out the back seat and was able actually to get the key and take it out.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean,
yeah. Yeah, but we never got it back, so it worked.
No, you never can, actually.
You never can. They go in once, and that's it.
No, I think you're not putting the seat into the clips correctly, but rather than explain it to you, if you go to the dealer or any gas station, they'll have the thing back in for you within 5 minutes.
Well, now, is the dealer going to charge me to do this? Is this...
Oh, what do you think they are? Some kind of...
A charitable organization?
Oh, of
what do you think you're dealing with here? UNICEF?
Well, I don't know. They were pretty nice. My wipers didn't work properly, and it was some old thing that I had done, and they just did it for free. I didn't...
Oh, that could be then. See, we live in a big, ugly city, and there isn't a dealer within 100 miles of here that would even give you the time of day for nothing. You walk in and say, what time is it? And
they say,
20
60 bucks an hour, jerk. Maybe out in Logan, Utah.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah.
The pace of life is slower, and I'm sure you will find some good soul who will reinstall your seat with a smile and a you all come back now.
Okay.
And unless your husband broke the thing, in which case it'll probably cost you around $300.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, well,
everything.
You might as well face the music, Kathy. See you later.
All right, thanks.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bruce from Seattle, Washington.
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Is it raining?
Buckets pouring. Don't want to come out here.
Don't want to move there, right?
Yeah, no. Forget it. And the coffee's bad, too. Totally overrated. I'm on my third cup.
What's up?
I've got an 84 Ranger, and when it's cold, it starts rough, it idles rough. It takes a long time to move from cold up to warm, and then sometimes it'll stall out. And what'll happen is I'll get about 20 minutes over to the grocery store or, you know, someplace to buy a new raincoat, and
Good.
I'll park it for about 20 minutes, get back in it, and then it'll just go wah, and it won't turn over. So finally, one day I called the tow truck guys, and I'm on a first name basis with them now. And they came out, and he pumps the accelerator three times and just real aggressively turns it, and it cranks and turns over, and he goes, it's your choke release. So I take it to Pete, my mechanic, and I say, Pete, it's either two things. It's either possessed by evil spirits. You know, the New Age is pretty big out here.
Oh, yeah.
And or it's the choke release. And so he had it for about a day or so, and he says, well, your choke is okay, but I replaced the rotor cap.
Yeah.
Thing is it runs better than it did. But it still has this kind of distressing problem of, like, when I pull away in the morning to get into traffic, it'll kind of go, and then, kind of get wonky on me, and then I've got to tap the accelerator and get it to go. So, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, I haven't consulted any shamans lately, but something tells me that there's something mechanical going on there.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, you may have. The choke release he's referring to is actually something called the choke pull-off.
Yeah, we used this as an answer to just about every question we got from 1981 to 1992.
Well, it's interesting. Just recently, I was reading an article someplace that stated that there were umpteen gajillion of these that were replaced on General Motors cars because the whole batch of them were faulty. They were defective. And it would have been an item for recall, except it never presented any real danger to anyone. So it could be that your choke pull-off is not working correctly.
Right.
And in fact, it's making the thing. Does it run poorly even when it's not being driven when the engine's cold? In other words, when you first start it in the morning, does it run kind of rough?
Yeah, it'll run kind of rough. And then what I'll try to do is I'll race the engine and try to get so I can hurry up and get it through its coughing phases.
Jeez, I hate to agree with a tow truck driver.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but you can test it yourself.
Right.
You start it up tomorrow morning after it's had a whole night to sit there in the street.
Okay.
And you take off the air cleaner.
Yeah.
And while it's running really, really rough, just push down just a little bit on that choke plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is? That's the butterfly that sits on top of the carburetor.
Yeah.
And when the engine is warmed up, it's completely vertical. And when it's cold, it's in various stages of horizontality.
Uh-huh. Horizontality, yeah. Horizontalness.
Horizontalness.
No, horizontality is better. I like it.
It's flat.
It's flat.
It's flat, yeah.
And if you take a pencil, for example, and while the engine is running poorly, you push that pencil so as to open that thing up a little bit, make it stand up more vertically.
Right, and I've done that before when this thing has not started up after I've driven it for about 15 minutes.
But you've got to do it while it's running and running poorly. And as soon as you do that, if it begins to run very smoothly, then that's your problem. The choke pull-off isn't working or it's out of adjustment.
And the tow truck driver was 100% right, and Pete wasn't.
Uh-oh. Boy, I hope Pete
wouldn't
doesn't listen
that
to this.
Be an embarrassment for Pete?
Yeah, or it's going to be even worse for me. I'll have to find another mechanic.
Well, no, you don't. You go to the tow truck driver. Set him up in business. Say you've got a natural talent for this. Get you all the 84 ranges we can find.
And drive them off a cliff.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like that's what the problem is.
Uh-huh.
So go for it, man. If that works,
okay.
Let us know. And if it doesn't work, don't let us know.
All right. Well, I'll try that choke plate deal. And
yeah.
We'll see what happens. I may give you a call back if it does turn out to be evil spirits, of course.
Okay.
So.
All right. You may be on Stump the Chump someday. You never know, Bruce.
Okay.
See you later.
All right, thanks, guys. You're great. We listen to you every week.
Yeah, in the rain.
Yeah, in the rain.
Your rain.
All right.
Bonne chance, Bruce. Bonne chance.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll tell you what to do if you find yourself in urgent need of a puzzler.
Oh, it sounds painful.
It is. We'll be back in a minute.
And even though public radio station managers put on Groucho glasses and sneak down the fire escape whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from Valvoline Motor Oil. Did you know higher mileage engines need different motor oil? Well, Valvoline does because they test oil every day in their state-of-the-art engine lab in Ashland, Kentucky. Valvoline's high-mileage motor oils with MaxLife technology are specifically formulated for high-mileage engines and have thick anti-wear film to help protect metal surfaces and extend engine life. Visit valvoline.com/cartalk to find out what product is right for your engine.
While you're sleeping, a whole bunch of news is happening around the world. Up first is the NPR News podcast that gets you caught up on the big news in a small amount of time. Spend about 10 minutes with Up First on weekday mornings from NPR News.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the no-new Puzzler. The Puzzler is taking its annual summer hiatus, and we know that while most of you are saying, thank God, there are a few misfits out there who can't seem to go a week without a Car Talk Puzzler. And for them, we have what?
Shock therapy!
And our weekly archival puzzler at our website, cartalk.com. So if you need a puzzle, go there. In the meantime, if you'd like to call us about anything, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sharon from Fort Worth, Texas.
Hi, Sharon. Hey. We haven't had a call from Texas for a long time.
Oh, well, I used to live up there.
Well, we won't tell anyone.
Okay.
So what's going on?
Well, I have a 94 Mazda B3000 pickup.
Yeah.
That we just replaced all the clutch mechanism to. The clutch, the throwout bearing, and the pressure plate. Because I couldn't shift.
Okay.
So I drove it for a couple weeks, and all of a sudden I couldn't shift again. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've burned this thing up in 2 weeks. And my husband said, no, don't worry about it. It's the hydraulic clutch fluid cylinder, the reservoir, okay?
Yes.
And it was dry. So I put the brake fluid in, that's what you use, .3, and pumped it up, and now it's driving okay, but it still is leaking out. So I called a Mazda dealer, the service department at Mazda. And he said, actually, you have two of those. There's an upper one and a lower one.
No, there's a slave cylinder and a master cylinder.
Okay.
We don't like that terminology, but that's what it is.
Yes, politically incorrect. There's a predominant and a subservient.
Okay. So one of those is leaking. I think the bottom one is leaking.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, can I just go ahead and keep driving and just keep filling it up, and it won't hurt it if it just keeps leaking out as long as I keep...
No, but eventually it'll start leaking out so fast that you'll have to have your arm out the window with the can.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's a drag, you know.
And I guess the other question that comes to mind is it doing now what it did before you spent the $500 for the clutch?
Well, it was $200 because they put it in. Yes, it is. And I've been thinking that going, well, but well, it was worn. He looked at the parts when they took them out, and it was my husband and my brother-in-law that did it.
And they were worn. Those knuckleheads.
So they did
this in the driveway.
So you couldn't shift, and they said, well, she needs a clutch. And,
well, he drove it, too.
And what was happening when you say you couldn't shift? If you put your foot, the engine's running.
The engine's running.
You put your foot on the clutch.
And it would grind.
And it wouldn't go out of neutral in any direction.
Yeah, I know.
Just grind.
You needed a clutch master cylinder.
That's what, yeah.
And you still need one.
I still need one.
Let's not. I mean, those guys spent a good weekend.
Day and a
nice
half.
Saturday
and
afternoon.
And they probably smashed their fingers.
They got all kinds of injuries, exactly.
They probably ruined $300 worth of clothes.
A small fire.
They probably
had a small fire.
They had to go out and buy at least $1,000 worth of equipment.
And tools.
They did have the tools.
The tools. So we're not even going to suggest that what they did was unnecessary. We're just going to say that you do need a slave cylinder, just like you did last week.
And a master cylinder, too, perhaps.
Probably both of them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would do both.
Do both.
Why not?
They should have, never mind.
Never mind.
See you, Sharon.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Paul from Bartow, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Paul. From where, Pennsylvania?
Bartow. It's a large rural route about 15 miles south of Allentown, 45 miles northwest of Philadelphia.
Got it.
A lot of loving and gentle people in the rural route.
And you're among them.
Yes, very much.
You sound like a loving and gentle person.
Is it possible that I would have driven through Bartow if I was going to York, Pennsylvania?
You might have, yes. It's, you know,
feel
Allentown
lost.
To Pottstown.
Sort of around there, eh? I think I did drive through Bartow one time.
You may have even bumped into Paul.
I may have.
Could well be.
Are you about 5'10",
no,
brownish hair?
6 foot even.
Yeah, no, it's a different Paul. Okay. So what's in your mind, Paul?
Well, I know you fellows are experts on cars, but are you as good on trucks and cattle trailers?
Cattle trailers, yes. Trucks, no.
Cattle trailers is one of our specialties.
Okay.
I just finished a seminar, as a matter of fact, on cattle trailers. So I'm right up on...
Right. Cattle trailers you know and love. So we're ready. Shoot.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a cattle trailer that holds about 7 or 8 cows, and it has electric brakes, and we pull it with a pickup. And one of the problems, or repeated problems, with the brakes is that... sometimes they grab, other times they don't connect. We've taken it to the garage several times, and they fix it, but yet they don't fix it.
Yeah.
And
these brakes are operated by a servo that's attached to your brake pedal.
Right, it's electric, attached to the brake pedal.
Right.
And the latest problem is when you put on the four-way flashers.
Uh-huh.
The brakes engage every time the light flashes.
Excellent.
And that becomes a real problem when you're going up a hill and have to put on the flashers at 40 miles an hour. It seems to slow you down a good bit when you're climbing the hill.
Okay. Right, because the brakes are grabbing, releasing.
Correct.
I'm sure that we can help you with this if you answer just one small question
for me. Okay, great.
How do electric brakes work?
My impression is that our garage doesn't know either.
Well, I can honestly say, and you know me, I'm an honest guy, I have never seen electric brakes in my life.
I don't know how electric brakes work either in actuality.
But let's guess. That's how we do with the other stuff.
We know that they have to work like regular brakes, and they must push a shoe against a drum of some
kind.
And they're operated by a motor of some kind.
Is a motor like in the wheel?
Yeah.
I mean, it could also operate...
Motor in the trailer or in the truck?
No, in the trailer.
In the trailer.
I don't know how they work.
You figure they're hydraulic?
No, they're not hydraulic. They're electromechanical.
So what's in the wheel instead of a cylinder? A little electric motor?
A screw.
A screw.
It's irrelevant how they work.
It doesn't matter. Ah, excellent. We're going to give them an answer without knowing how they work.
Right.
Paul, this is going to be good. Get a pencil.
I got it.
I can hardly wait to hear this.
I'll pass it on to our friendly garage.
Well, no, I mean, the key issue here is that the emergency flashers are turning on the brakes.
Correct.
Somehow or another, current is getting fed to those brakes when the flashers are on. So it seems pretty clear that you've got a wire crossed.
And that's funny. I thought you had a wire crossed.
And the other problem, and I think the where the problem is perhaps, is in the brake lights. Because in addition to this thing operating the brakes, it also has to turn on the brake lights, which are turned on by your brake lights. Isn't there a wiring harness that's hanging out from the back of your truck?
Surely.
That you plug into?
Right. That's the way it works.
So the problem's in... he's giving me that look. He's giving me that look. It's pretty clear that we don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I want to say, though, Paul, it's been awfully nice talking to you.
And you sound like a wonderful, caring...
You
individual.
Do.
Why can't these cows walk to their destination? I mean, what the hell's wrong with them?
No, because then they'll get too muscular and then they
they get skinny.
Oh, yeah, we don't want that to happen.
No.
No exercise for the cows. You don't have Steermasters for steer. Steermasters.
And what are you doing with these cows when you transport them anyway?
Take them to other farmers.
Oh, what are they? Oh, never mind. I don't want to know what they do with them. Milk them. That's right.
That's good. Okay. Paul, we don't have any idea.
we don't have the answer. But okay. I do believe that your wiring problem is in the brake light circuit because the emergency flasher bulbs, the emergency flashers are also operating on that same filament.
Right.
And somehow or another, you are getting current fed through the emergency flasher circuit, which is also the brake light circuit.
Right.
Of course, you don't notice the problem occurring when you step in the brakes because the brake lights are getting energized and so are the brakes.
Correct.
But what's happening is you are somehow energizing the brakes. You know what it could be?
What?
It could be something as simple as a bad bulb.
Yeah.
A bad bulb?
Oh. Bulb.
I was working
on that.
A brake light bulb.
Okay.
But here's the way to try to figure this out. Take the bulbs out.
Surely.
Of your truck.
Mm-hmm.
The brake light bulbs, and they're probably the same bulbs that operate the four-way flashers. Remove them and see if the problem goes away.
Okay, good idea.
Try that. If that doesn't work, take the cows for a walk.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
See
Thanks,
you, Paul.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Now, are we just dreaming here? But I had the sense. Paul is the kind of guy you could sit down with and have a cigar and a cup of coffee. He sounded like a wonderful person.
Yeah, you could enjoy milking a cow with Paul.
You could.
Yeah.
I mean, how can a person's voice tell you all that? I'm shocked at all this.
Then again, you're shocked at everything.
I'm shocked at pretty much everything.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Alice, and I'm calling from Hastings on Hudson, New York.
Hi, Alice.
Hastings on Hudson.
I really don't have a car problem. I have a family squabble problem that's related to cars.
Yeah.
The problem is that I'm very lucky. I have a daughter and her little family living on the other side of town from where we live.
Yeah.
And I like to go to her house. I call it the low road because there's a big hill between my house and her house. And my husband says it's so much longer to go that way, I should just go up and over the hill. Well, I've clocked the distance from my house to her house on the low road is 2 miles. And if I go up and over the hill, it's a mile and a half.
Yeah.
You know, every time I go my way, it's so much longer. And if I go his way, I just feel it's more of a strain on the car, and I use up more gas climbing up this hill. Well, we got the altitude on the hill. I don't know if you need all these numbers.
Yeah.
How long have you been retired, Alice?
How long? I'm not retired yet, but he is.
He is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew one of you had to be retired.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Give me the data.
The altitude, I live at 170 feet. My daughter is also at 170 feet high, and the hill between us is at 320.
Yeah.
And I don't know which way we use more gas, and I know which way you use more time, because my way I have to go through a traffic light.
Well, your way is longer, both in distance and in time, but
yeah.
it's shorter in so far as you don't have to climb an unnecessary hill.
Yeah. He says, well, you go on the other side, you go down
there you
again.
There you go.
And so whatever you've spent going up, you regain going down. Is he an engineer?
Yes. Doesn't it sound like an engineer?
Of course. It's a classic engineering approach, which is entirely wrong. And is he listening? I hope he's not listening.
Well, actually, he is.
Yeah, because we're going to dump all over him.
That's okay.
Well, I'm not so sure, Alice. So.
I mean, theoretically, he is exactly, of course, right. Theoretically.
Okay.
That the energy, I mean, if this were, you know, if this were a physics problem when he went to school and he did a physics problem.
Yeah.
And the energy expended going up would be regained almost, except for losses from friction and da-da-da-da-da.
Right. Potential
going
energy.
Down,
yeah.
A potential energy, kinetic energy, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Would be a great theory. That's assuming that you didn't mind if you were going 85 miles an hour when you hit the bottom of the hill,
right.
Which you don't. You do mind, and that's why you have to use the brakes.
Right.
It's the same as if you were walking.
Yeah.
Which way would you walk?
I would walk a long way because it's so much easier.
You ain't kidding. Ask him if he had to walk. Would he walk up over the hill and down?
Well, a better question is, would you bicycle?
Oh, your bicycle, you'd go the long way.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Every time.
There is no formula for how much gas you use going up a hill.
Sure, I mean, we could calculate all of that. But
I doubt we could calculate it. Somebody could calculate it.
Your husband probably could calculate
it. He's got nothing to do. He's retired.
And that's exactly what gets him into trouble. Because he could make all those calculations and the answer would be, so what?
See, what you can't take advantage of, as you pointed out at the beginning of the call, is you can't take advantage of the potential energy that you gain by getting to the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Because you must slow down.
You have to brake.
So yeah. That being the case, I think I would always opt for the roundabout way, especially considering that the fact that you're only climbing an additional 20 feet in elevation,
uh-huh.
And it's only costing you half a mile.
Oh, wow. You came in on my side.
We came in on your side completely, but we would always come in against an engineer because they're all bozos.
And we're going to open a special website just for your call, Alice. Because I know we're going to get like 50,000 emails.
Yeah. Engineers who are going to tell us that it's better to go up and then down. And I'll say the same thing to them that I say to you.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you.
I hope your husband has some other redeeming characteristics.
Oh, he does.
And he probably does.
Yes,
and
try to
cure him of this engineeringness that he has. I mean, he's tell him he's retired now. He can forget all that stuff because most of it is nonsense.
Okay. I'll tell him.
Buy him some golf clubs, Alice.
so he
can plot some trajectories.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very, very much.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've atomized another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
Yeah.
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the scenic route, bean sprout, brook trout, pig snout, sauerkraut, and Guinness stout, anti-gout, pig out, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of new product repair is Warren T. Myfoot. Our staff acupuncturist is O. Howard Hertz. And our shop foreman is Luke Busy. Our student consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our staff disciplinarian is, oh no. Our mortgage loan consultant is Nora Lenderby, and our solicitor of new ideas is Obi Quiet. Our director of customer rebates is Noah. Oh, no. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our director of Three Stooges Studies is Lee Iacocca. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Outavindo. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff, and our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the teenage werewolves skulking behind their parents in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1929. Subscribe to our weekly podcast and check out our Taste Challenge clothing and best of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, complete details on how to get rid of your old car without having to sell it.
Does this involve throwing the keys on the front seat, leaving it unlocked, and calling Cousin Nunzio's tip line?
Well, actually, no. It's the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program, where you can donate your car and benefit your favorite local public radio station.
Details available all week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though mayors in at least two villages look up and say, "Are we missing our idiot?" whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.